Hello, and welcome to Mental Health Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lang, and I'm here with Dr. Mark Burton. In this podcast, we will talk about all things mental health. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back, everyone. This week, Dr. Burton and I are going to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder, commonly referred to as OCD. And like we do with most topics, we're going to start by breaking down what is OCD.
So basically, OCD is you have the obsessive part, and this comes right from the DSM-5. So obsessions are defined like this: as recurrent or persistent thoughts, urges, images that are experienced at some time during the disturbance. They're intrusive and they are unwanted. And most often they cause a certain amount of anxiety. So that's the obsessive part. Then the compulsions are used typically to relieve the stress that comes from the obsessive thoughts. And so the compulsions, that's defined as repetitive behaviors. Now, some common ones that people might be aware of: hand washing, ordering, you have to put things in a certain order. Even I had a client once where they had at night when they went to bed, because of fears of safety, they had to click on and off the lights in a certain order, which also included locking the doors in a certain order. But if you were to do that one time, it probably, one time a night, it probably would just be, okay, I'm locking up. But what happens is it's most often associated with multiple times. And so I have to lock this door 7 times, or I have to turn on and off this light 5 times. And so there's this repetitive piece with it. And so those compulsions are really aimed at preventing or reducing those obsessions, those recurrent thoughts. So they can be, the other part that's important is they're time consuming. They take up a lot of time. And so that, affects your life in negative ways. It can negatively affect your relationships. It can certainly negatively affect your productivity in the workplace. And so they really become hard to deal with. It's a serious disorder. And for people who suffer from it, I have a lot of empathy for them, because when you talk to them, it's just so distressing to feel like there's nothing you can do about it. But like a lot of emotional and mental health issues, I think there are some things you can do with it. So that gives you an idea of what it is. Those components of obsessions, compulsions, takes a lot of time, it's repetitive, and it really is disruptive to your life.
And what I've gathered too, and from what I've heard about it, is what they're doing, these compulsions that they're acting out, it relieves their symptoms. And that's ultimately why they're doing it, because it relieves that symptom of anxiety. It helps them feel better.
Right. I mean, if you go back to anxiety and what we talked about last week, this idea that if you can get some control, then that tends to relieve the anxiety. And so it's this, I think, turning on and off the light or locking the door multiple times gives the person a false sense of control.
Yeah.
And so it's not really, an effective way to gain control over the obsession, but it gives them a sense of that control.
Yeah. And how many people in America are affected by OCD?
So in America, it's about 1.2% of the population in any given year is dealing with those symptoms of OCD. What's interesting is it's pretty standard around the world. I mean, internationally, it's about 1.1 to 1.8% of the population. Females slightly more experience it slightly more than males. The mean age of onset is around 20 years of age. But a quarter of the cases with OCD start by the age of 14. Onset after the age of 35 can happen, but it's pretty rare. Okay. And one of the interesting stats that I saw was in males, that a quarter of the cases start before the age of 10.
Interesting.
And it's a, and so when we talk about the age of onset, it's a pretty gradual increase in these symptoms. So it's not going to start out like one day you wake up and all of a sudden you're, you know, washing your hands 50 mm-hmm. times. Mm-hmm. It'll start out one time, you know, I'll wash my hands a couple of times, and then it grows and it snowballs and mm-hmm. it becomes really uncontrollable.
Okay. And so what are the early signs and symptoms of OCD? Maybe if you're trying to recognize it in someone, or if you're worried that someone you know might have it, what are some early signs and symptoms to look for?
Well, I think talking about their worries or anxiety. So again, one of the common ones might be washing hands or mm-hmm. being afraid of germs. Now, this gets very difficult in the age of a pandemic, because there are actual things that we ought to be worrying about.
Right.
But, you know, when the CDC says wash your hands, they don't say, well, you really need to wash your hands 20 times in order to be effective. You know, it's mm-hmm. one time washing in a certain way. So I think that if you're living with someone, and I think of it as a parent or as a grandparent, you know, looking at the children, if you start to notice that there are some of those repetitive behaviors, mm-hmm. then I think it's important to address it or talk about it. And I think the way you address it is really important. And often, you know, you might see your child, okay, they're washing their hands all the time. And one of the natural responses of parents, for some reason, is to try and shame them into not doing it. And mm-hmm. that is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because shame never did anybody anything positive.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anything to alleviate whatever the issue is. And mm-hmm. so I think if you see it, whatever the repetitive behavior is or the compulsion, is that's when you start to have a very gentle, I'll call it gentle mm-hmm. dialogue.
Yeah.
With the person, where you go back to something we talked about last week, and that idea of just listening well and understanding, mm-hmm. that I think is the first step. Mm-hmm. What's going on in your world? And you could even talk about it in terms of what are you worried about? Or mm-hmm. for some people, what are you afraid of? And in that way, you can start to get an idea. Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to pick up germs from the doorknob. And mm-hmm. so you start paying attention. I think for parents, you know, with children, pay attention to what's going on. And if it doesn't feel quite right to you, then follow it up.
And I would imagine too, with kids, if, for example, if they're washing their hands all the time, you could just say, hey, why do you wash your hands so much? Like mm-hmm. that would be, I think, a great unintrusive way to approach it, because you just want to know. I think that could be helpful.
So I'm going to give you a little hint about language. So language is really important. And I didn't talk about this last week. I remember mm-hmm. that. I try to never use the word why.
Okay.
And there's something about it. Like if I said to you, well, Liz, why do you do this? Whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen is you're going to become defensive. It's like, okay, now I have to prove to you or justify to you the reason that I'm doing whatever the behavior is. Okay. So you can take any why question, you can change it into what, how, when, or where. And if I said to you, oh, what is that like for you, Liz, when you're washing your hands five times? And you're going to get a very different answer. And the person is much more likely to give you a response that's not defensive, because you're just saying, tell me about it, essentially.
Okay.
What is it that gets you when you wash your hands? And they might say, well, then I make sure that, you know, all the germs are gone and I don't have to worry about it. See, that's a different conversation.
Yeah. And I think it sounds like it's really good advice for what we talked about last week, instead of if you're talking to someone who you're trying to help through this, rather than saying, well, why do you feel this way? Say, okay, tell me about how you feel.
Yes, that's exactly it. And, or what is it? I always like the question, well, tell me what that's like for you. What is it like mm-hmm. for you to feel like you don't want to get out of bed? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, since we're talking about OCD, mm-hmm. what is it like for you at night when you feel like you have to lock the door seven times? I'd love to know what that's like for you. Mm-hmm. So because if you say, why do you do that? Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to go into my defensive mode. and try to defend to you, well, I'm going to be really safe. That's how I'm, you know, ultra safe. But you don't want to get that response. So.
That's a great tip. So what are the effects of OCD from the pandemic? And obviously, it's a lot of people who probably already have OCD. It's probably just exploded. So what have you noticed?
And so here's an example that, you know, if someone is, I hope this isn't a derogatory term, a germaphobe, mm-hmm. you know, they're really mm-hmm. concerned about germs.
Right.
Then the pandemic has just put a loudspeaker on that. It's just amplified it like crazy. And so I know of people who, like, they'll come in, and if they come in from outside, they have to take off their clothes. They wash their clothes mm-hmm. so that to make sure that nothing's on their clothes. That if they go out, they'll never touch anything. Although a lot of people, they have those nice gloves that you can wear. And I see a lot of people wearing gloves, which isn't a bad idea. Mm-hmm. It's just taken to an extreme. And so you can't, you know, if you can't sit in the car, you have to put something down to sit in on your car seat. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just amplified it. And as I said earlier, you know, in this episode, there are some real reasons to be concerned. And so it gets very tough to tease this out in the last year in the pandemic. But I still think that there are ways that we can help people not go to the extreme. Because that's, you know, we talked about how many of these issues exist on a continuum, mm-hmm. which is true. So on one end of the continuum, I'm going to be worried about washing my hands when I come in. On the other end of the continuum, when I come in, I'm going to wash my hands 20 times to the point
or in water that's
too hot or, mm-hmm. you know, and my hands will get red, they'll get rubbed. Mm-hmm. So you see that. You want to be able to help the person who's on that other end of the continuum.
Mm-hmm. Right. So do you often see a correlation of people who go through a traumatic event developing OCD? Is that pretty common?
Yes, that is common. And so, you know, often we talk about the combination of nature and nurture. Mm-hmm. And nurture we just use as a way to talk about the life events that we have. And nature it would be the genetic makeup that we are born with. And so I think it's pretty clear from a lot of the studies that there is some sort of genetic component, because often you'll have these first degree relatives that are experiencing the same thing. But in many mental health issues, mm-hmm. there you can have the genetic makeup, but if there is not a triggering event, then you will not necessarily develop that particular thing. So let's say if there is some sort of genetic predisposition, say to OCD, but you don't have some sort of event that triggers it, then it's unlikely that you will. But there is certainly evidence that early childhood trauma can be that triggering event. Mm-hmm. Because it's certainly true that many people, sadly, have those early childhood traumas, but not everybody develops OCD. Mm-hmm. Not everyone who has those early childhood traumas is going to go down that road, but some do. And so I think what you could assume in at least in some cases is that for some of them, there is that genetic predisposition.
Okay. So let's talk about treatment options for obsessive compulsive disorder.
So the most effective treatment is a combination again of, mm-hmm. of probably talk therapy. And I think there's some drug treatment that can be helpful. I have some clients and one person has pretty severe OCD, and I'll just mention this to get it out of the way. I think that often doctors will prescribe SSRIs, mm-hmm. Those antidepressants, but there's one in particular that I've heard of that really is helpful. It's called citalopram, and it goes by the brand name, I think, of Celexa is one of them. Okay. So that's going to be one. And there's a lot of good evidence that shows that's pretty effective at just calming the brain is essentially what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Because if you talk to someone who has those obsessive thoughts, it's like they can't control them. They're just running around inside your head. And so what the drug tends to do is to calm it down. So that being said, that's the drug option. But I think that what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, which again, we've mentioned before, a lot of people just go by the initial CBT. Mm-hmm. But there is a specific subtype, I suppose you might call it, of cognitive behavioral therapy, which is called exposure and response prevention, and or ERP. But I think that specific type of CBT tends to be effective. And let me explain what that is, because what you're working off of is this idea of habituation. And so one example would be if you jump into a cold swimming pool, eventually become habituated to the temperature. At first you jump in and it's like the worst thing, right?
Shock to your system.
It's the worst thing you could ever do. Uh-huh. And so in doing that exposure and response therapy, what you're doing is you're exposing the person to the very thing that, you know, they want to then engage in compulsive behavior to relieve that tension. And so the idea is, for instance, maybe it's washing. So this is a hard thing to do, especially in this pandemic time. Again, I think I'm cringing at just thinking about describing this. But if you go out and touch things, for a lot of people, they wouldn't be able to do that. Just the idea of touching something out in public
makes them feel really anxious.
Well, really unsafe, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But if you can do that and then just wash your hands one time, the more you do it, you become habituated to it. So it's often that if you then wash your hands 20 times, you become habituated to that and it becomes a habit, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So what you want to do is experience the response and then, or experience the exposure or the thing that you're anxious about, and then over time change your response. Mm-hmm. Now, some of this, it reminds me a lot of what I call systematic desensitization, which is very similar in that you can say in the office, you can take someone who's got an anxiety about spiders. Mm-hmm. And the way you would go about this is you'd get them to list all these steps from very easiest to handle to very hardest. Like the hardest might be having the spider sit on their hand. And the very easiest might be, the spider's in a cage over there 10 feet away. And then you have all these steps in between. And what you're doing is as you expose them gradually to those increased, you know, getting closer to the spider, you help them to calm down first. So there is this physiological component that's going to be important in that exposure and response therapy, because you want to help the person change that heart rate, which we actually have pretty good ability to control our heart rate.
Probably comes down to breathing.
Right.
Controlling your heart rate.
Breathing. You know, we talked about last week, the idea of shallow breath compared to deep breath. And so if you shift to a deep breath, then you're going to lower your heart rate. Mm-hmm. But it's really important to have the exposure, to have that different response. But there's also a piece of it that you need to control the physiology. Mm-hmm. So it's a long process, but I think it's certainly better than living with it. Because I know many people who have, say, gotten over the fear of germs. Mm-hmm. And again, it's that habituation. And I think I don't know that you ever give up working on it completely, but I think you just reinforce often this idea that you're okay and that I can go outside and I can wash my hand one time and I'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
So let's take a minute and talk about what I would imagine to be one of the harder symptoms of OCD, and that's intrusive thoughts. I've experienced this myself and I talked about it in our postpartum depression episode, of intrusive thoughts of harming my baby. And that's a little bit unique to postpartum depression. So one example that I can think of is someone who was terrified of killing people. I mean, when she was around knives and a lot of people, she would just have this obsessive thought of, I could kill all these people with a knife. Which it has to be very disconcerting to be able to go through that.
Right. It is disconcerting. But again, I think you approach it in a similar way, although mm-hmm. it's important to realize that every situation is going to be different. And that's why right. I think it's really important with OCD that you find someone, a therapist who's experienced at doing that. And, you know, not everyone, like I wouldn't myself, I wouldn't treat someone who has OCD. I would always find someone to treat them. And that's important that you, in finding a therapist, find someone who has a lot of experience, because there are people who are very well trained in doing this. Mm-hmm. But I think if you go to that, the intrusive thought area, I mean, you could say, you could bring out, like in the therapy room, mm-hmm. here are all these nines, and let's sit with it. And let's talk about your thoughts. And because I'm here and you can, you know, are you going to kill me? But mm-hmm. you figure out, you've calming down and you figure out, I can sit here with these nines and I'm not going to kill someone. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a really important component with any of these disorders, which I would call anxiety based, which I mm-hmm. think this is. And that's to have a really good meditative process. And that you do daily, because I think if you're thinking about intrusive thoughts, one of the things you want to be able to do is let go of the thought, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, it's a very Buddhist principle. I'm not a Buddhist myself, uh-huh. but I know that this idea that thought comes in and it goes out, and it's just this thought that inhabits your mind for a mm-hmm. time. And you get to a point where you can, I think with a meditative process, mm-hmm. that is very specific, which they do. There are guided imageries that are very specific to the OCD and the intrusive thoughts, that over time, you're retraining your brain essentially to let it go, which is what you want to do. You want to, because I don't know that it's helpful to get like, oh, I'm never going to think of that. Mm-hmm. It's more that thought's going to come into my head and it's going to leave. I mean, here's a confession for myself. I live up a canyon where a lot of bikers, and sometimes the bikers are just on road bikes. They're uh-huh. incredibly annoying. Anybody and I thought, wow. I mean, occasionally, not all the time, I'll have this thought, wow, you know, what would it be like to bump one of those bikers off? I never follow through, but it's just right. those bikers are so annoying, you know, uh-huh. out in the middle of the road. So I think we all have yeah. intrusive thoughts, or thoughts that don't make sense to us at times. I think it's important to acknowledge that our brain in a lot of ways is just, it's really active all the time. Mm-hmm. And so just because you have that thought does not mean you're going to follow through on that thought. It's just a thought.
Yeah, I think that is helpful. And that was something that I would use to kind of comfort myself when I was dealing with postpartum depression, and I had these intrusive thoughts of harming my baby. And part of it was a physiological thing, because I right. would be genuinely mad and frustrated in the moment. But looking back, I would never do that. And yes, I have those thoughts, but that's not who I am.
Right.
And we hear a lot, well, watch your thoughts because they become your actions. But that's not necessarily the case. I think we can have mean thoughts about someone, and in the moment, it's just because it's how we're feeling. Right. But it doesn't mean that we're an awful person because you're having awful thoughts.
That is absolutely true.
Don't voice them, and you're not an awful person, right?
Right. And I mean, here I gave this confession. I don't think I'm uh-huh. an awful person. I would never do uh-huh. it. I think right. I have these negative thoughts because I'm thinking, oh, why are you out in the middle of the road? Uh-huh. You know? So yeah, just because you have that negative thought does not mean you're a bad person. And I think mm-hmm. we have to accept that. Our mind and our brain is such an interesting organ in yeah. that we think we should be able to control it all the time. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes it's very hard to control it. But I think what's important is we have a better way of controlling our behavior and yes. our response to those particular thoughts. Just mm-hmm. because you have a thought does not mean you have to act on it. It's the most, one of the most important characteristics of becoming an adult is becoming self-regulating, that right? Mm-hmm. Right. Isn't that what we want to teach our children all the time?
Yes.
Yes, you're mad. That doesn't mean you're going to hit your sister. It means you can, you know, that's not the response. The response might be, you know, let's talk about it. And yeah, yes, you're angry.
Mm-hmm. Finding a positive outlet for your feelings, mm-hmm. I think is helpful for everyone. And what you said, it comes down to learning self-regulation. And we feel like, you know, as we're parents, we have to master that with our children. But as adults, we have to maybe sometimes master that as well.
Well, I think we forget as adults that we actually do a pretty good job of that.
Okay.
Because I certainly see people in my office who say, oh, you know, I have this thought about my spouse. And I said, well, fine, it's a thought. But mm-hmm. have you ever followed up on that thought? No, I never would. Okay, then it's fine to add the thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a thought. And I think in general, you know, when our first instinct isn't always to every time we have a negative thought to say it out loud. And mm-hmm. and that's, again, it comes down to that self-regulation. And in the heat of the moment, and when we're really angry, we're really frustrated, or if we're depressed or tense, it's easy to have those thoughts, but it's also easy to not act on them. And it doesn't make us bad people.
Right. So, that lack of sleep makes self-regulation harder. You know, going back to our big three, the exercise mm-hmm. and the meditation, the lack of sleep. And so I really want to emphasize, I think meditative practice mm-hmm. for this type of issue, OCD, is critical.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
But I do think the drug option is important to consider as well.
Yeah.
Because I've known people, and you know, I tend to be a bit anti-drug, except mm-hmm. when I, you know, if you're having trouble functioning, then I think you can get some good relief. And it also, what the drug often does is it helps you calm your mind in such a way that then you can start working on it in other ways. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that you need to think, oh, I'm always going to be on this drug. Mm-hmm. I think it can certainly be, I'm going to use this as a way to then work on the, you know, that exposure and response mm-hmm. therapy. It just helps me be calmer.
Yeah. And I'm a big proponent of natural methods with handling anxiety and depression, but sometimes medication, I mean, it's there, it's a wonderful resource, right. and there's certainly times for it. And I think when you have compulsive thoughts and compulsions and you can't help it, then, you know, use that resource.
Yeah. So, if it's too distressing, use the resource. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we talk a lot about, again, mental health being on a continuum. Do you feel like OCD ever just goes away? Or do you think people just learn to manage their symptoms so well that it doesn't affect them? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer. I think that for a lot of mental health issues, it is about management. And the people that I've talked to, I'm thinking about this one client in particular who has had great relief with the germ issue, mm-hmm. but I would guess he would say that he manages it. And so he was involved, you know, in therapy for quite a while with a therapist who was experienced with OCD, and he'll talk to that therapist maybe quarterly, mm-hmm. like four times a year. That's it. Oh, and okay. So it's almost like a maintenance piece. Mm-hmm. So in answer to your question, I would say we learn to manage it.
That makes sense. So thanks everyone again for joining us. That's all for today. We will say goodbye to Dr. Burton for next week, and then he will be back with us the following week. Next week, we are going to talk about a really important topic, and that is suicide. And so I'm going to do that with Dr. Adrienne Burton Denmark. She's going to come back with us and we will talk about that. So tune in. I'm going to try to make a lot of noise about this episode because it is a big deal and it is really, really important. It's
really important. I agree.
Yes. So we will talk to y'all next week. Have a question for Dr. Burton? How about a topic you'd like us to cover? Send us an email at mentalhealthpod21@gmail.com. This podcast was produced and edited by Liz Lang. Music is by Audio Lounge.